There's a phrase in our Festival of Light, which many of you hear every week, which it says, whereas in the past, suffering and sorrow was the coin of man's redemption, for us now that payment has been exchanged for calm acceptance and joy. Swamiji wrote this Festival of Light under divine inspiration, from divine inspiration, in 1986. At the time, Ananda literally had just moved from the north of Italy to Assisi, and he was in seclusion in Assisi. He was also married to Rosanna, who was a very deeply dedicated, charismatic Catholic. That was her background. She was on our path. So there was a great deal of sort of emerging at that time that was happening between more from the Christian side, the Jesus side of our teaching. And so the Festival of Light itself in various ways makes references to Jesus and makes reference to varying other traditions. Actually, it was quite amusing. There's a line in there that says, in the festival, your chosen people have always been those of every race and nation who with deep love chose thee. Now, I was raised in, my family was Jewish, and the Jews being the chosen people is a pretty important principle there. Giving service here one Sunday, and there was a young man from Israel. And afterwards, he was new, he was only here once. And he came outside and accosted me quite strongly. He didn't know my own background. He accosted me quite strongly about how dare we cast aspersions on the Jews like that. And I thought for a moment, I said, actually, the festival casts aspersions on the Hindus and the Christians too. You just didn't notice because it isn't part of what you're thinking. And cast aspersions is actually not the right word. But the way of saying it is that self-realization the reason that Paramahansa Yogananda incarnated as an avatar is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. When virtue declines and vice predominates, I, the infinite spirit, take visible form. Again, in the festival, we say the same thing. Many times has that light descended, called to earth by aspiring love. And this is the divine takes form, human form, so that we can see and understand anew the power of infinite revelation. Each one of these masters, Buddha, Krishna, Moses, Jesus, every great master that's ever lived has an absolute state of consciousness. It's absolute freedom. It's infinity. It's eternity. You don't have four or five of these lined up next to each other. If we come to a state of oneness, we must all be coming to that same state of oneness. The difficulty is the purity of that revelation has to be then explained to people who are not quite as free, or at least some of them. And then as time passes, that teaching gradually gets shifted into something that makes more sense from the perspective that we're standing on. I mean, we can only understand what we can understand. An Episcopal priest of mine, when I asked him a certain theological question, a friend of mine who's an Episcopal priest, and that sounded funny the way I said it, he explained to me that the full revelation of Jesus did not come into expression for several hundred years. It took time. And he's a Kriyabhan also on our path. And I said, so you're saying that Jesus didn't actually know his own teaching, that it took generations of clergymen before they could understand it. He was so steeped in his own tradition that he hadn't really realized the implications. And then his comment, rueful comment, was that his life was simpler before he met me. And I understand what he meant, because once you start really trying to think deeply Many of our cherished assumptions simply don't hold up. They're sentimental or even superstitious rather than actually based on awareness. And this is the great challenge of spiritual life, is to come into a calm, true perception of reality as it is. So there in the festival, Swamiji says, whereas in the past, suffering and sorrow was the coin of man's redemption. Now, this is a poetic condensation of a very big teaching. And that very big teaching is that Jesus was both crucified and resurrected. But almost all the symbols of Christianity are the crucifixion. I remember in Europe once I was in a church and I saw they had an image that was Jesus on the cross. But artistically and philosophically, it was much more satisfying than any I'd ever seen because Jesus was standing free in front of it. So they had combined the image of the cross with the image of the resurrection so that he had gone through it. But the meaning of his life was not that he suffered. The meaning of his life was that he transcended all suffering. And in the most, I don't know what I want to say, medieval of the Catholic tradition, if you don't suffer, you're not being religious, because suffering is the way that we get free. Saint Bernadette of Lourdes, she was a young girl and she had visions of Divine Mother. And then eventually she went into a convent. And there was at least one, none there, this is historical fact because this happened recent enough for us to know, who was terribly jealous of her and very petty-minded and made her life quite miserable because everybody seemed to think she was such a great spiritual being because she's had these visions of Divine Mother, whereas in her picture of was that you must suffer and you must, you know, strain. Suffering and sorrow is how we win God's grace. And she couldn't believe that this young girl who was just tending her flock or just out in the a poor peasant girl would be graced with the vision of Divine Mother. And there's a beautiful movie called Bernadette of Lourdes, I believe, or Saint Bernadette. You must get the old black and white version. Don't get anything that has any color in it, because it's, but the old black and white version, it's an absolutely beautiful film. But the way they dramatized it, which was probably close to what really happened, Bernadette died quite young, I think at the age of 24, and she was dying in a state of grace, and this nun just couldn't bear it. And she said to her, you know, how can you possibly have won God's grace like this? You've never suffered. And Bernadette just said, you're right, of course, I haven't. It's just the love of Our Lady. And then she thought about it, Bernadette thought about it, and thought, oh, there is something I could show her. And she lifted her robe, and it turned out that she had, I believe, tuberculosis in her knee. But she had this horrible, just this horrible, open, terribly painful sore that she'd been living with almost the whole time she'd been there in the convent. But it never crossed her mind even to mention it. And only by divine inspiration did she feel, oh, maybe this will help this nun understand. So when the nun saw that she'd suffered, somehow everything got okay. Okay, now let's just take it into another level, because it's a very important teaching to understand. You know, sometimes we do think, I come on the spiritual path, all my difficulties are over. Now I do Kriya, and what we get into is we get into what's known as Vaishya consciousness, merchant consciousness. Now it becomes a deal I have with God. I give you a certain amount, you give me a certain amount back. If you're in a human relationship, if you're in what is trying to be a love relationship or a friendship relationship, if you make it all about how much I give and how much I get, how successful is that relationship going to be? If it doesn't work with each other, do you think it works better with God and Guru? Of course not. True love is self-offering. True love is joyous giving. True love is an absorption in the well-being of the other and a forgetting of the well-being of oneself. Not that one martyrs oneself, but just one doesn't worry about oneself. And every difficulty that we have between people is always when it's, what about me? That's fine for you, but what about me? Like this. Now, of course, we're valuable in the eyes of God. Suffering and sorrow is not the way we please God. We live according to truth. We give according to kindness. I am as important as you. You are as important as me. We are all God's children. And together we work in happiness and joy. But suffering is simply the way this world is. And in that sense, Jesus' life was exactly what it was. He was not lauded by the world. He was not made the king. He was not given great riches. His pathway was not strewn with roses. It was literally strewn with thorns. And in the end, he was humiliated, he was tortured, and he was killed. I mean, that's about as bad as it gets, you know? And that was the life. He was an avatar. He was a fully realized master. And he walked into this world and showed us what it was like. Paramhansa Yogananda, whom we think in modern times, people aren't crucified. What they are is they're taken to court, generally, as he was several different times. Their money is taken away from them. They're scandalized in the newspapers. You know, in the state of Florida, he was thrown out of Miami because he was dark skin and he was trying to speak to integrated audiences. They drove him out of town. I mean, this is what happened to the one that we think of in such a glorious way. Swami Kriyananda's life, we all, many of us know that life. I just wrote it up in the book I just published, Lightbearer. Doing my best to tell you, he was betrayed by those closest to him. He was persecuted to the end of his life. He had nothing but physical troubles all the way through. We went through 12 years of litigation, millions of dollars. Many of the projects he tried to launch failed. Of course, a great many of them succeeded, but by no means all of them. And he was perfectly fine going through all of it. This is where we have to come to. Jesus knew what his incarnation was going to be, but his was a life of joy. No one would follow a master who's just gloom, 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 and doom. You know, when there was a time when Swamiji wanted us to share with the world more about Yogananda's predictions about hard times that might come. And Jyotish Devi, I, and three or four others did a little tour around the area here. This was in the late 70s. And Jyotish and I were two of the primary speakers. Devi and Jyotish weren't married yet at that time. In fact, it was that tour that brought about their marriage. So it was a great success in that sense. I write in the book, because we were telling everyone about the, you know, coming disaster, we always called that tour the disaster seminars. But it wasn't a disaster. But the San Francisco Chronicle interviewed Jyotish and me, and they called us, they put our pictures in the paper and called us the gloom and doom duo, is what they called us. But then he said, but far from what you would expect. And then he spoke actually about how joyful we were and how we radiated, in fact, you know, a strangely uplifting quality. So this is the paradox, you see. This is the paradox that we get into. It's not as if even the masters, they don't live a different life than we live. They're imprisoned in the same prison. I heard Master using that exact image. He said, we're all in jail together. You know, this is here. We're locked in. We're locked in to the light and shade quality of this world. It's just what this world is like. It's an extraordinary mixture of light and darkness. So we can't imagine that merely because we love God, God is going to spare us. There's this marvelous incident in the life of Saint Teresa of Avila, who was absolutely dedicated to God, dedicated to Jesus. Jesus would appear to her often and regularly. He was a visitor in her cell. You know, sometimes she'd be in the parlor of the cloistered convent where she lived, and she would have to excuse herself because she said, "I have a visitor in my cell." And who she meant was that Jesus was waiting for her. And even when she was an elderly woman, she was still going out and founding these convents, which was a heck of a thing to do during that period of time. These were cloistered nuns. They'd have to travel in these, you know, sheltered, covered carts, you know, pulled by animals. And she was having to cross a river in the flood, and the cart upset, and she's tossed about in the freezing water. And, you know, they really think it's the end of her. And finally, she finds herself miraculously on the other bank. And Jesus is standing in front of her. And Jesus says to her in the most friendly way, "Don't worry, Teresa, this is how I treat all my friends." And she said, "My Lord, no wonder you have so few." And that's exactly right. This is how I treat all my friends. There's an extraordinary story that many of us know because we've heard it in Yogananda's own voice on a recording. And it's about St. Anthony of the Desert, who spent decades in isolated caves and in underground tombs in solitary meditation. And his story is amazing in itself, but this is the last part of it. Decades and decades he's been living on, you know, nettles and thorns and whatever it is, just in this incredibly austere dedication to God. And finally, in this underground tomb that he's living in, the devil makes its final effort. And for him, for Anthony, the dark force took form. And there were hieroglyphics of creatures on the wall of this ancient tomb that he was in. They came alive, these fierce monsters. There's threatening him. There's the voice of the devil telling him to give up his faith in God. The cave itself is shaking, and the mountain is threatening to fall on his head. And Anthony is steadfast. And finally, all the darkness disappears, and Jesus is there. And Anthony says, "Lord, where were you?" That's a pretty honest question, isn't it? If you could have done this at any time, why did you wait till now? And Jesus answers, and you can, those of you can hear Master's voice, he says, "Anthony, I was always with you. I was just the same with you." Oh my. I was just the same with you? It sure feels different to me when you're standing in front of me in light than when I am sitting in darkness and the animals are screaming at me. But that's how it actually is. He's just the same with us for this reason. God's love for us is not the love of our limited self. What we love is our pleasure and our comfort and our present ideas and our desires to have our life go according to our plan. We are very aptly named children of God. You know, little children, "I'm just going to stay here, Mommy, and live with you forever. You know, we'll always be happy here. Just you and me, Mommy, you and me and Daddy, we'll just do this. This is the way it's always going to be. I don't need to go to school. I never want to leave you." And then the child turns about 13 and won't even have dinner at your table anymore, right? Because the child simply doesn't know what its own potential is. It doesn't know who it's really going to be. It doesn't understand the possibilities of this world. So we, as little children of God, we're always telling God exactly what we want. "This is what I want. This is what I want. How do I pray? What do I pray for?" We pray for ease, comfort, and we pray for ease and comfort of the people we love. Because it makes us very uncomfortable, in fact, even more so, when the people we love suffer. We don't want anyone to suffer. And it's very hard for us to understand that even though God suffers with us, Master writes, "When I am only a dream," he said, I will peer at you through the darkness," meaning the darkness that separates us. "And when you weep, I will weep. It's not that God doesn't feel it. It's not that God is indifferent. It's not that Divine Mother isn't a true mother to us, but a true mother wants what is best for the child. And that's what God wants of us. He wants who we're going to really be. And he knows that we have to rise, we have to claim, we have to become our potential. And we have to become our potential inch by inch, fighting against all of those fears, all of those limitations, all of those false ideas, until we can stand in the true light of who we are. And Divine Mother weeps with us, just like any mother would weep with us, watching us go through what we must go through. But the wise mother knows. And the ultimate wise mother is Divine Mother. The ultimate wise father is Divine Father. So what we have to understand, going back to the festival, whereas in the past, suffering and sorrow, this was the misunderstanding that the suffering was the point. It's not the suffering. Has been exchanged for calm acceptance and joy. You are always with me. And if this is what you send to me, this is the story of Saint Anthony. Anthony, I was just the same with you. How can we even believe that? But it's true. A devotee friend of mine was talking to me recently about something very, very difficult that he had to go through. Just very tough. And he was just talking about, once it was over, he was feeling so, like, annoyed that he'd been put through such a difficult time. And suddenly he said he heard Master's voice strongly saying to him, scolding him, saying, I was always with you. Not even, I was always with you, but I was always with you. How dare you think I would abandon you? What kind of a master would I be to you if I just turned my back on you? Very powerful thought, isn't that? There's a well-known sort of, I don't know, poem, story, that's a little bit sentimental, but is also very touching, and I'm sure you've seen it. It tends to be sold in Christian bookstores because it's about Jesus. It's called Footprints in the Sand. And you see this art picture of two sets of footprints, and then suddenly there's only one set of footprints, and then there's two footprints again, set of footprints again. And the little poem that's there is between the devotee and Jesus in this case. And the devotee says, but I was suffering so when you abandoned me. You know, there was only one set of footprints in the sand. And Jesus said, oh, that was the part where I carried you. And only when you were strong again did I put you down to walk on your own. You know, this is a very different world than the world we think it is. The saints and the masters look at this creation and they just don't see what we see. And our project as children of God is not small. And it's not easy, because it demands absolutely every ounce of strength that we have. But the point of the whole is not, oh, the arduous effort, how difficult this is. None of that is the point. The point is that look where we're going. Look at the promise. Look at the masters. Feel that joy. Think of the triumph. And that is what we're doing. Calm acceptance. Calm acceptance, because I know that God is always with me. That is our one, that is the only mantra that we need. You are always here. There's a wonderful prayer in Swami's book of affirmations and prayers. It says, problems cannot exist, Lord, when you are near. Give me the strength always to hold you in my heart. Isn't that a beautiful way to put it? It's not that problems can't exist in life. We certainly know that. But problems can't exist when you are near, Because in that nearness, that is the end of all difficulties. That is the point of every challenge that we face, so that we will be tested to the point where we think for a moment that we're alone, and then we'll hear Master saying, "I was always with you. Anthony, I was always the same with you. Oh Lord, my mistake. Not your absence, but my lack of awareness. Give me strength, Lord, always to hold you in my heart." That is how we should pray.